Hello, everybody, and welcome to the first ever Match of the Week podcast here on the Place to Be Nation Podcast Network. We're bringing something new to you here in 2018, kind of a little, a nice little change of pace in your wrestling audio content here for you guys on this network. My name is Tim, and I'm here with the king of food banter on Twitter, Tanner. Tanner, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm very excited to get this podcast started. It kind of happened really quickly. I like mentioned it one day on Twitter, and here we are like a week and a half later actually doing it. So it was a very quick turnaround.
Yeah, we, you know, I of course, I've been on a show with Stephen Graham called the Pro Wrestling Super Show, and we did a lot of shows back in the day when Pro Wrestling Only was doing its Greatest Wrestler Ever poll, which me and Stephen were a huge part of. And so, you know, I had been a part of this network for a few years now, but I've been kind of getting into a lull with my my time in grad school and baseball stuff. But Tanner, you've been doing a lot of podcasting yourself. You have your own weekly podcast, and then you've also been a part of the We Don't Know Wrestling podcasts for the last few years, too.
Yeah, I try to hop on with Sam for about once a month for We Don't Know Wrestling, and then I have my own podcast, a cheap plug, All You Can Hear podcast that you can listen to on SoundCloud that gets uploaded every Monday. So yeah, I guess I like hearing myself talk a lot. Is pretty much what it boils down to.
That's correct. All podcast hosts like the sound of their own voice, even if they don't admit it. So
yeah,
but yeah, so the idea behind this podcast is. You know, you kind of came up with the nuts and bolts of it. So why don't you talk a little bit about what you thought this podcast should be and how it came to be originally?
Pretty much what this podcast is there's a lot of wrestling that just because I guess forums are kind of dead now in a way. I mean, you still have PWO and DVDVR and whatever, but there's a lot of people just don't go on forums, so they kind of miss like your hidden gems per se.
Right.
So the whole idea of this podcast is to try to bring those hidden gems out from the shadows and to just allow people to watch them maybe with, you know, this podcast introducing them to them or watching it and then listening to this podcast. And we're still going to do like your more hyped matches. We're going to get to your classic All Japan stuff, your classic New Japan stuff, all that good stuff. But this podcast is more focusing on hopefully showing you a match you've never seen before.
Correct.
Would be the goal.
We're trying to kind of figure out some matches that people either have forgotten about because, you know, there's going to be two types of timelines for this. This is the match that was looked at one point very fondly and has been like completely forgotten about, or the mm-hmm. ones that as the footage explosion has happened in the last 5 to 10 years, that have been kind of floating out there and nobody decided to really kind of look into it. And revisit some of these older matches. Now, this is what's interesting about it is that, you know, we obviously have our own preferences as to what we think great matches are, but we're going to try and keep it to a certain level of mystery as to where we're going to be going with a lot of these matches. And so, you know, we're going to definitely be trying to find some stuff that people haven't heard of or even seen before. But we understand that also the audience of this podcast is most likely someone who has watched a lot of professional wrestling in their lives. So,
absolutely.
But we're going to do everything we can to get something there that maybe either you've forgotten about or you knew about and haven't watched. And we're also going to try and provide you with links to that, where you can find it, stuff like that when we do find it. And so you guys can go and watch this on your own. So, the other thing about this is we're going to keep this short. These podcasts, they're going to be a weekly podcast, but we're going to keep this to about 30 minutes. And a lot of this because we're only talking about one match, right? We're only talking about one match.
Yeah.
We're only talking about kind of a certain time frame. And so we're trying to keep this to 30 minutes. And so we might be a little bit over today considering we're kind of laying this whole thing out for you. We want to be around the 30-minute mark when it's all said and done so that this is easily digestible. We know a lot of you guys are listening to hour, 2 hour, 3 hour, 4 hour, 5 hour podcast.
5 hours, 6 hours, yeah. 7 hours. I mean,
if you're listening to Between the Sheets, you're definitely listening to a 4 or 5 hour podcast. And Chris and Dave do great work over there.
Absolutely.
We want to kind of be a little, palate cleanser. If you want to just kind of think about a match you haven't seen in a while, or a match that you had heard about and kind of want to get some more details on. Obviously, we're going to be going into the details of it. So spoilers, it's going to happen. Just keep that in mind. This will be fun, and we hope that you guys will enjoy it. So, all right.
Yeah. So I guess we should just dive right into the first match.
Yeah. So the first two shows, Tanner's going to do his favorite match, and this is not the best match we've ever seen, but our favorite matches. And so Tanner is going to do this one first, and then we'll do mine next week. We're going to keep mine a mystery for now. But Tanner, why don't you talk about the match that you have chosen this week?
Okay, so I chose Jinichiro, and excuse my pronunciation, because I can't pronounce just like normal words, so try and pronounce Japanese names. I'm a little bad sometimes, especially for some of these guys that, aren't current wrestlers. So, but this week, I chose Jinichiro Tenryu versus Atsushi Onita from FMW's 5th anniversary show in a no-ropes exploding barbed wire cage death match, which is a mouthful, but trust me, This match has everything I love about pro wrestling, from the cinematography to the like the pure spectacle of it. Like, it's in Kawasaki Stadium, the 40,000, and FMW doesn't even have a TV deal at this point. So like the fact that there's 40,000 people there is already kind of nuts. And the fact that Tenryu and Onita both come from the same background from the All Japan Dojo, Onita being the first actual graduate from the All Japan Dojo, and Tenryu coming a couple years after him. It's kind of neat for this match to happen, a decade after they both start wrestling in, a barbed wire cage death match.
Yeah, and so the date on this is May 5th, 1994, and it's the second... Yeah.
Happened before I was born.
Tanner was not born when this match happened. Which is just hilarious. But what's really interesting about this, you're talking about the no TV part, but so this is a year after the match that a lot of people think put FMW on the map, which was Onita's match with Terry Funk, in a similar match, not in a cage, but it was a barbed wire explosion match. And it had the crazy ending to it that is perhaps one of the most memorable matches in the history of Japanese pro wrestling, with Funk laying there in the bloody heap and Onita walking away from the ring after he had pinned him, and all of a sudden realizing the explosion is about to go off, and him going back and covering up as the explosion goes off. This absolute just spectacle. You have people crying as Funk and Onita are going back after the match. It's just this really just incredible stuff. And you talked about how like FMW sets up its production values and stuff like that. Talk a little bit more about like what kind of drew you in to that, because it really is one of the main reasons why this match I think really plays so well right now.
Yeah, it's one of those things where Onita was kind of the master of making something much more dramatic than it needed to be. So, like, I don't know the full story, just, again, because this match happened before I was born. But allegedly, tickets were not selling well for this 5th anniversary show. So Onita puts his career on the line in this match. And so you have 40,000 people in this baseball stadium. And then as Tenryu and Onita are making their entrances, they have timed it perfectly, where the sun is setting behind Kawasaki Stadium, and it's just like this whole, like, I don't even know how to describe it, like action movie showdown between the main protagonist and the main antagonist, even though both guys are getting cheers in, but obviously Onita is the babyface in this because he is the FMW guy. And it's just one of those things that, like, for me, it just takes this match to another level, like, because a lot of, like, you see, like, current day WWE, how they mess it up sometimes, like, when Undertaker wrestled Bray Wyatt in an outdoor stadium, and they somehow screwed it up so bad that neither of their entrances were at nighttime, and both those entrances need darkness, like, to see FMW blow them out of the water, two decades prior to that, it's kind of funny to me, so I don't know. But the match itself is just fantastic. And Tim, I want to get your perspective on this, because like you were into the tape trading, like you did all that. You know, I was that was at or before me. So I want to know like how this match kind of played.
Well, the whole thing with me getting into the tape trading game was that I was kind of towards the at the end of it. So what happened was when I got into the tape trading game, it was kind of at the end of VHS, the beginning of DVDs, and people were doing some internet-based uploading when like Napster and stuff was coming out. Some people were doing a lot of those match trading. And so I didn't see this on tape, but I did see it probably early 2000s, mid-2000s, when the P2P services like LimeWire and Kazaa and things like that, which if anybody's listening to that and is just kind of chuckling at those names, yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm old. But yeah. So this was, definitely around that time, and this was one of the matches I ended up seeing from it, this and the Funk match. And so – you know, FMW at the time was still like everybody wanted to see All Japan, New Japan, All Japan Women. FMW though was interesting because they kind of tapped into the cult, like you know, like the cult DVD movie area where like it was kind of like they taped a bunch of FMW stuff, and they did this later in FMW stuff where the Japanese extreme wrestling that like ECW would kind of partner with and it was helped to release it in the States. But at the time, you know, FMW kind of had this kind of special place, I think, in a lot of people's hearts. DVD VR was big on FMW shows, the big shows at least. Their 100, their DVD VR 100, which happened years ago now, talked about the Funk match, and they mentioned just how they really enjoyed the drama behind it. And you talked about Onita just being a master at it. The one thing about this, as you said, there's no TV. FMW didn't have a TV deal, but their tapes were somewhat popular amongst a certain sector of Japanese wrestling fans at the time, especially in such a time like 1993, 1994, when the All Japan Women interpromotional stuff was going on. All Japan was basically coming into its peak. New Japan was starting to come up even more with the Three Musketeers. And so you just had this deluge of professional wrestling. And it was really interesting to kind of think like when people first started seeing these, you know, I didn't see it as soon as some of the other like, you know, main tape traders saw it, which I think would come out like a couple of months after the show was done. But I do remember this match in particular. It was good, but I think people love the emotion of the Funk match more. But now that I've watched this, like really enjoy, because of course we've seen so much more Tenryu and really I think gotten a better appreciation for him collectively as a worker, that this match really, I think, it plays off of those sensibilities. And we'll talk about this when we get into the match itself. What everybody perceives is going to happen, they play off those perceptions very well in this match, and it really makes it stick out. So go ahead and talk about that. Yeah.
Oh yeah. So like, I think the match itself, like it's worked much differently than you would think death matches worked. Like the first, I would say half of it is full on like King's Road. Like they're doing limb work, they're on the mat a bunch. Like they're doing like this King Rhodes-esque epic, which is really odd considering Onita retired from like proper wrestling just to do death matches. Right. Like because he had the injury, it put him on the sidelines. That happened in the mid 80s. He comes back in the late 80s, starts FMW, you know, that whole deal. But so the first 10-15 minutes of the match is literally just a bunch of groundwork that builds up to this epic second half that sees, you know, Onita thrown into the, you know, into explosions. Tenryu takes, a barbed wire explosive bump, which is kind of insane. It's great because it's really the tale of two different matches. Like the first match, take away the cage and the barbed wire and everything, and it's an All Japan match. Second half is a full on high drama, crowd eating out of their palm of their hand. And they kept the crowd hot during that initial mat work too. But the crowd just eating out of their hand, like, you know, Onita chants and like this cool visual of Onita in the white shirt, the blue trunks, covered in his own blood from his arm and his legs. He's not like gushing blood from the head. It's just like he has cuts all over his arms from the barbed wire. And that's a really cool visual from... like, if you love how pro wrestling is shot, this match will be extremely your shit, just because it is a masterclass of how you should shoot highly dramatized wrestling.
Yeah, the big thing about this match is that you're playing off of, you know, Onita, who can just take a ton of punishment. Like, that's his thing, is that he's in this environment because he knows he can take whatever Tenryu's throwing at him. But the idea is, okay, so how much can Tenryu take? And so the first time he goes into the cage that you mentioned earlier, there's just this kind of like, almost like this gasp almost, like, oh man, he actually hit in the cage. Like, what's going to happen now? And it's a total buy-in. Like, that, when that moment happens, that's when the match kind of kicks into overdrive. And, you know, yeah. And from there, it just turns into this really awesome bomb throwing. So a couple months earlier, Onita had a tag match with Tarzan Goto against Tenryu in Wrestling Romance. And in Tokyo at the Ryogoku. And so it's like, it's basically, it's like the All Japan shrine, like, they, you know, right? And so he goes back home, quote unquote, and he beats Tenryu with a couple of power bombs, which just absolutely like blows people's minds that would happen. And so the second half of this match basically comes to Tenryu, who's, you know, his power bomb is his move, against Onita, whose power bomb is basically the move that he started using to take down Tenryu. And so that becomes the story of the second half of the match. But the way that Tenryu kind of like says, okay, you're going to have to do a lot more than just power bomb me. Like, he lays it out to the point where it's like, he sends Onita into the cage multiple times. Like, it is almost like one of those things where it's like, okay, yeah, you're great at this, but I'm still Genichiro Tenryu. It's like, you're still going to have to do way more to beat me. And it turns into a really just great stretch run with people wondering just how much punishment Onita can take in order to take this fall.
Oh, yeah. And I think a match like this, because this is in 94, and there's not a whole lot of 94, 95 Tenryu that's available to watch, which a lot of people would consider his peak just based on age, which is kind of insane considering, you know, he had been in sumo or got out of sumo in the late 70s, and they're considering the mid 90s as peak, but it is, because he's so good. And I've read a lot of people, you know, years ago, before Tenryu started getting a lot of, you know, of being a truly elite worker hype, a lot of people were disappointed he would do a match like this. But the way I see it, the fact that he can do a match like this where it's not, you know, so built upon actual, I don't want to say moves, because that makes, you know, your classic All Japan stuff sound like spot fest, but they're very much not, especially the stuff he did with Jumbo, very much not.
Right.
But the fact that he can do this highly dramatic match without doing a whole, like, he does a lot, don't get me wrong, his performance in it's great. Onita's, you know, is fantastic. But I think the fact that he can do this kind of match in this kind of environment, you know, in FMW in front of 40,000 people that got, you know, like him because he's Tenryu, but, you know, are going to hate him because he's potentially going to retire Onita. And I think that proves just how much of an elite worker Tenryu was, that he could go and do a match like this and make it so believable that, like, oh, maybe Onita pulls it off. Or,
right.
Like, I enjoy that part of Tenryu's career where he kind of just does like this bunch of different stuff. I mean, he did it from the time he left All Japan to the time he comes back to All Japan in 2000. Like, he's just doing all this crazy stuff, and a lot of it sticks, which is kind of nuts.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, he's a guy who I've talked about it before, but this is kind of like the match of the two cowboys of the Japanese professional wrestling scene. Like, you know, of course, Tenryu left in April of 1990 from All Japan. The knee injuries, you know, forced Fuchi out of All Japan, just working that style in the mid-80s. And so, you know, these two guys have kind of strayed from the path of the two big pillars of the Japanese wrestling community and were able to go out on their own and still be successful. You know, Tenryu, when he started up WAR, he had this great feud with New Japan that he had to kind of get it started, right? To kind of show that he was willing to do whatever it takes to be on the same level as the other two guys. And Onita did this completely other way of doing professional wrestling that stuck with a lot of people and was very successful in for a few years there. So, it's a very interesting environment. It's something that really I think could only have happened at that time, which is really crazy to think about.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
I don't think you would have been able to have this match a year or two down the road. Like, I really don't. Like, you could have tried, but I think that the way that WAR had been around for almost 2 years and was, you know, selling out the Ryogoku and it was, you know, and was doing fine, and was doing, and FMW, they did have the year before with Terry Funk, they had the big presence at Kawasaki Stadium and they did well there. So I really am, you know, kind of, I really want to be adamant about this. Like, this was a match that at the time, because of the fact that there was no TV for both, Tenryu and Onita, like, this was incredible for them to pack about 50,000 people in a baseball stadium and sell it out, and it turned into a great piece of business for both of them like this. Like, this is pretty incredible, even in a very saturated and very still popular Japanese wrestling scene at the time.
Oh, yeah, and absolutely. And the fact that it happened somewhere like Kawasaki, like, I think just getting that many people there in a time where neither of you have television presence is just insane in itself. Like, never mind the fact that you sold it out, but just, like, getting people there, like, it shows how much the people in the time loved Tenryu and loved Onita, because, you know, Tenryu, according to all laws of what people believe about Japanese wrestling, Tenryu and arguably Onita should have been kind of blackballed considering they were both Baba boys.
Correct.
And the fact that not only were they not shunned out of the scene, but they become, I mean, the two biggest stars outside of a major promotion, I think, easily in the mid-90s. And it's just kind of insane what they managed to pull off. Like, you know, this transfer to, you know, War as well, because Onita ended up working War some more after this, because the whole gimmick was Onita was going to retire after this match. And then he goes, oh, I lied, I'm going to retire next year. So he goes on this year-long retirement tour after this match, which, you know, Tenryu and Onita actually start teaming and they form a trio, I think, with Bam Bam Bigelow or something. And they just kind of do their thing. And then obviously, you know, Onita never truly retires. Onita, just like the great Terry Funk, retires about Correct. 9 times, but is still an active competitor in every sense of the word.
I'm sure that when they met the year before that's what happened. And I'm sorry, I kept calling it Ryogoku. It's the Budokan. It's the freaking Budokan where WAR would run all the time. It's still early for me, folks. My bad.
We have to remember Tim's on Pacific Standard, which is the wrong time zone.
It is correct. I'm in the wrong time zone. I want to talk about the aftermath of this match, because it was, so the kind of the finishing stretch, obviously, if you watch it, is, you know, Onita gets a couple power bombs just like he did in the tag match in March, and Tenryu is able to withstand it, and then Tenryu just does what he normally does in this match, which is just club you to death and then powerbomb you until you're down for 3, and that's what happens. But the end of this match, you talked about, you know, Onita just laying there, needs to be helped to the back. When they get to the back and the media is there waiting to greet him, he's like face down on the floor, just, you know, blood and sweat dripping down his arm and forehead.
Yeah.
And just kind of talking about like he's done. And then, of course, which kind of became a staple for Onita death matches, is they have the ambulance back there waiting for him to take him away. But, of course, he has to, like, you know, say his thing, you know, to thank his fans and all that stuff before he gets into the ambulance and goes away. This real dramatic, just melodramatic, awesome bit of business. It's one of those things that you can't really get from anything else but professional wrestling. Like, there's ambulance matches, but they're nothing like just Onita going to the, you know, hospital after a match like that, quote unquote, and like basically before he gets in there fighting off getting medical assistance to thank his fans. Like it's just a remarkable thing. Onita just has this aura around him, this just charisma that just doesn't go away. It really is insane.
Oh yeah, and the fact that he's still out there doing this, you know, 24 oddish years later is kind of insane, and people still eat out of the palm of his hand. I mean, he's one of the most popular Japanese wrestlers ever. I mean, he ran for office in Japan based solely on how popular he was as a wrestler, which is nuts.
It is. Of course, remember, you know, for the proper reference last year, of course, he had his great, like, what a carny ass dude this dude is. Just what he did with Combat Zone. And I know there's people who love Combat Zone, and there's people listening to this who are either part of Combat Zone or know people who are with Combat Zone. But it's like, man, that's just the most carny thing ever he did to them last year when he had the build up with Matt Tremont and just like not only really working so that he gets a boatload of money for barely a little bit of work, but he gets a couple of his buddies on the show for a payday.
Yeah. And he uses it to build a match rematch in FMW in Japan. He brings Tremont to Japan.
Yeah. It's just like it's amazing. It really is. Onita is the great, like one of the greatest carnies of all time. Like it's one of the great moves ever.
Oh yeah. And the thing is, I don't know if you could ask anybody where they're like, yeah, it wasn't worth it. Because I mean, it's Onita. Like the fact that he makes you think it's worth it is just like, mind boggling.
If you're gonna get worked in 2018 or 2017, if you're getting worked by Atsushi Onita, I think you're doing it right. You're getting worked by the best.
Yeah, absolutely.
So was there anything else you wanted to bring up?
I mean, nothing else I really need to bring up. I mean, just the. You're doing yourself a disservice if you don't watch this match, just because it's a little long. It's on YouTube, but the YouTube video is, I think, it's like 40 minutes. You need to watch all of it. I think about 25 of it is the actual match, but you need to watch the entrances. You need to watch the hype video because they really lay out the story of the powerbomb and how the powerbomb is important in this match. And that's why Tenryu uses, I think, 3 or 4 of them to finish Onita off here. And you need to watch the post-match. Like, it's a great package. The match itself in a bubble is really good, but it's the complete package that really pushes this to literally my favorite match ever. Like, isn't the best match ever? No. Would I even say it's the match of the year for 94? Probably not. But as far as favoritism goes, I love it. Like, I cherish this match. Every time I watch it, I find something new and I go a little bit higher on it. So who knows? Maybe in like 10 years, it will be my match of the year for 1994. Who knows?
I would highly doubt that. But I would say this. I think that, you know, I had only seen the match proper. I'd never seen the in and out, but you're right. I think the in and out of it really, really helps make it. So, one thing I do like was thinking about we should try and do with this is kind of have some reference points. And so if you're looking for other things like this, you know, if you like this match when you watch it, or you're looking for some kind of other things like it, a couple of things that I came up across, I think would be really neat. Obviously the Terry Funk match from the previous year, May 5th, 1993, that's a great starting point. And Onita also, I saw this entrance and I posted on my Twitter, 1999, he goes to New Japan and takes on Masa Chono in a barbed wire explosion match. And his entrance is one of the greatest things ever. Like, it's almost worth watching the match just for the entrance, just because, like, and so I just, if you want to kind of get the Onita, like why Onita is a big deal, especially in Japan, and you're looking for more than just this one match, I think that 93 match, and then him going into New Japan when they're running the dome like 6 times a year back in 1999 and facing off against one of its biggest straws, like, I think that's a worthwhile match. So is there any other, and then what about like Tenryu? I mean, obviously he does stuff after this, like you mentioned, but you know, just a couple other Tenryu matches that you think would be worthwhile for people to watch or things along those lines.
It's crazy because I guess like, it's so weird to me when people are like, oh, what's a Tenryu match I should watch? And I'm like, wow, how like, I'm not like, how have you never seen Tenryu? I'm like, oh my God, these people have never seen Tenryu. Like, you have to watch this. Like, I'll send people 10, 15 matches of Tenryu's to watch. But I think to fully appreciate Tenryu, you need to watch, I think you need to watch some of the war stuff. You can pretty much pick and choose because he does a bunch of random trio tags and trios. But the Hashimoto match from 93, I think, is a big one that people right. need to watch from war. Mm-hmm. And but I like you need to watch the match with Jumbo. Arguably, it's June 5th, 1989.
Yeah.
Arguably the best match of the 1980s in Japan. Certainly in all Japan at the very least. It sets the tone for the 90s boom with Misawa, Kawada, Tao, and Kobashi. And like he still uses a lot of the trademarks, like even in this match, like the King Road style, they build up to this epic climax. And that's similar to what they did in this death match, except obviously it's a death match.
Yeah. The Hashimoto match, I'm glad you brought that up because that is the end, basically the end of the establishment of war. So they had this great feud that they built up in New Japan, where they invaded Korakuen Hall, and it was a big deal back that previous September. We might talk about that match too. That match is phenomenal. But then that led to him eventually facing Hashimoto in war a few months later. And yeah, that match is phenomenal. That's a great call on that.
Yeah, so. And they end up, I mean, and that's a whole tone, like Tenryu and Hashimoto meeting later in the late 90s, like in the G1 and stuff, like in 98 and stuff.
Yes. Yeah. And that's a great match, too. I mean, that
whole Tenryu and Hashimoto series, we could do a whole episode just covering that whole series because it is a phenomenal, phenomenal piece of work.
Yeah. That's the good stuff, yeah, right
absolutely.
There. But yeah. So, you know, just watch this match. We'll post the link on the description for this podcast and the YouTube link for it. And so you guys will be able to watch this and enjoy it. It's a great piece, 40 minutes, well worth your while, and you guys will be able to watch that no problem on your YouTube. So, but yeah, that's kind of the basis of it. We'll kind of get into we'll figure out a rhythm for the shows going forward. But you know that's kind of what we're trying to do. We're trying to give you kind of a good idea as to why this match is great, and we'll do this going forward with other matches. Next week we'll bring up my favorite personal match. That is more well known than match, obviously. But we'll keep it at that point. And the other thing too is that kind of shows you like that's kind of going to be the range. It's like it's two notable workers in a match that maybe you haven't seen, or two notable workers in a match you probably definitely have seen. But at the same time, we're going to try and lean more towards a match like this than we are towards a match like what we're going to listen or what you'll listen to next week, which is not a deterrent, but you know, it's still going to be kind of showing you the range of what we do. So, we are both on the Twitter. I am at Mr. Tim Livingston. So MR Tim Livingston. Tanner.
You can follow me on Twitter at Tanner1495. And also cheap plug, you can follow my podcast on Twitter at AYCH podcast.
Correct. So, and you can hit us up on there.
Send us suggestions. We'll have this if you want us to cover a match. Yeah, send us some stuff.
Yeah, and we are trying to kind of pick out things that we like. People aren't like if you suggest to us like you know an All Japan like a big time All Japan match or a big time New Japan match, it's like yeah we might get to it, but we want things that. People just don't talk about enough. But like if there's anniversaries or something that comes up that we think would be a good timely thing, we'll talk about it then. But you know, we just want this to be a nice little 30-minute piece of wrestling audio for you guys. So keep the suggestions coming, and we'll get to them as best we can.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, Tanner, good working with you, and we'll do this again next week, and it should be fun doing this. A nice little project for both of us on the Place to Be Wrestling Place to Be Nation Wrestling podcast.
Thank you, Tim.
No problem. Thanks, Tanner.